Hello, it's Eric.
This is Tim.
How are you, sir?
Good. How are you?
What's the agenda today?
You know, I think each of us will have a pretty good list of updates and questions. I've got at least six or seven things on my list. A lot of them are just going to be informational, kicking around some ideas.
Is everything COVID-19?
Yeah, everything I have is COVID-19.
Okay.
One thing that came up that it might be of interest to you, Eric, or not, as the case may be, but I was on our CCAT phone call earlier, or Zoom conference earlier this morning, and Commissioner Jeannie McQueenie from Eagle pointed out to everybody that for any of the municipalities within a county to be eligible for any kind of reimbursement, they would each have to issue their own emergency declarations. And I sent out an email to all of them, alerting them to that. Because I don't believe any of them have they? I haven't heard anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, and that's a well-known rule. And so, yes, numerous counties have declared.
No, yeah, many counties have, but she's saying that the individual towns have to issue their own.
Oh, I missed that part.
Yeah, so I wouldn't be, I'm pretty sure I haven't heard of any of them issuing their own disaster declarations. If they decide to, I can imagine they'll be looking to so look at our emergency declaration and see if they can use it for their own purposes.
So Steamboat did theirs earlier, and then Hayden did theirs last night. So
oh, they did
both
do
of
one?
Them are already, yeah, Steamboat already had done theirs a week ago or so, and,
oh, okay,
and Hayden
good.
Did theirs last night. So Oak Creek
okay,
and Yappa, we
good.
Still need to have them get on board. But
Yappa and Oak Creek, yep. Beth, are you online yet, or...? Well, we can give her a couple of more minutes.
Did you guys see that crazy story about Iran and people dying from methanol? Because they think it's a cure for coronavirus.
What is methanol?
It's alcohol, but
oh.
not the good kind.
That's what comes out of the mine sites, isn't that part? I mean, out of the oil wells as well.
Yeah.
Well, we're kicking around oddball stuff. Eric, did your listserv light up at all over the San Juan County Sheriff's declaration of closing federal lands?
No, so far I've only heard it from you.
Yeah, and also there were several counties in southeastern Utah that closed public lands within their counties. I think the general consensus has been that they really can't do that, that's federal primacy. I do know that the Gunnison County Commissioners have considered it, and they've actually received some advice that maybe they would have primacy over federal lands within the county. It seems to me that that's true. And it's not like I think we're anywhere near ready to take that step ourselves, but it's kind of an interesting legal concept.
Rio Blanco County had always asserted that they had control over their federal lands.
Well, they have, I think that they have law enforcement authority, but maybe not the authority to actually close off access. They certainly have the authority to go out and arrest somebody that's committing a crime, but it feels like a reach to suggest that they could unilaterally close off access to federal property.
So, Tim, you copied you on the email this morning regarding the overtime and the rest. So, and Beth had already been copied on that. So, hope again, I think we're on the same brainwave here that we weren't going to accrue comp time and we're paying out that stuff and we're going to get it done right now. So, just wanted to make sure you were on right board right with them.
Yeah, you know, I haven't had an opportunity to read that one in detail, but. I will here shortly. I'm pretty sure we've all been on the same page all along. Beth just texted me. She's 5 minutes out from joining us. Let me see if there's anything other else that's not, doesn't require Beth's presence.
So, you know, one thing that would be good, and, you know, and I hate to stress out our departments, and Beth and I, you, all three of us talked about it at our commissioner meeting last night. Maybe it needs to come from Beth today or tomorrow or something through the department head meeting. But I think it'd be good, you know, just to get an update from our department heads, too, so we can know where how they're faring through all this stuff and how things are going. So, you know, I don't need to be, you know, and well, what we did yesterday and the rest, but, you know, kind of an update to the board of how all that our department heads are dealing with this, you know, COVID-19 and the remote working and, you know, just if we don't know, we don't know. So the more we know, the more we can address that and the rest. So hopefully we can get that done.
I thought I saw some kind of, so many emails, it's really hard to remember. I recall seeing something yesterday from Beth that included a request of departmental updates to Mark Collins by close of business on Monday. But then I think I just forwarded you an email that Mark got back to me on, and he's actually taking his son down to Denver for a doctor's appointment today and said something along the lines, see you Wednesday morning. So the idea of him starting before Wednesday seems to be off the table right now.
So this is Kendra. What was requested by Mark was that the department heads just send a copy of their most recent update that they had sent to Tom to Mark. So it's a repetition of what you guys had already received. Mark just wanted them to send their most recent one they had previously sent to him so he could get up to speed.
Okay. Well, that clarifies that. Thank you, Kendra. So, yeah, Doug, I agree with you. Getting those up.
This is... Hello?
Go ahead.
So this is Kathy. Can you guys tell me, do you want us to set up his Munis account so he starts getting approvals right away, or do we want to leave it the way it is until he's kind of been on the ground for a short period of time before he starts doing approvals?
So I would say we're going to leave it the way it is, at least until Wednesday.
Okay. Well, yeah, but so we'll just, I'm just wondering if in HR, we automatically set him up so he's the approver for timesheets and everything else effective his first day, or you want to not do that?
Well, you know, he might as well hit the ground running. I'm sure that Kendra can help walk him through that process if he's confused.
Okay. All right. So I just needed to know that.
So I guess we'll hear from Mark if that's a problem, because, you know, I'm good with however we need to do to get him in. I don't want to have the tide flow over the top right off the bat. So,
yeah, I mean,
and again, I'm
that's a good point, Doug. Kathy, why don't you hold off on that until we give you further direction?
Okay.
So I guess, you know, that, you know, so, you know, the timesheets that you have, Kathy, so, and I'm Kendra and I, Kendra with, you know, me with a lot of Kendra's help are approving the accounts payable. So, and again, if we can come up with a process for the, you know, the next week or something, again, I'd like to get Mark's feet on the ground before we ended up inundating him. So if we need to do something, you know, I'm happy to do the approvals of the department heads pay and Kendra and Deanna. Kendra does Deanna's as well. So
So I'm going to hold off on making him the approver of multiple things until I hear from you, one of you.
That would be good. Speaking of which, Kendra, are you on the line?
Yes, I am. I had to pop down to answer the doorbell, but I'm back.
Okay, great. Hey, so I did get together with IT. I did successfully access my VPN. I got all the way to the welcome to Rauch County. I clicked OK, but I'm still not able to see the network folders, and I'm still not able to access Munis. When we get done with this call, I'm going to work with Willie a little bit further at IT and see if I can't get that resolved. In the meantime, I've still been unable to do the approvals that you forwarded to me. I don't know how much of a problem that causes and if we need to find another way to get that taken care of.
Are you able to see the approvals?
No, I can't see anything. Either on the, you indicated that I ought to be able to access Munis online to do that. And while I can get into employee self-service on Munis and take care of approving timesheets and vacation requests, which are minimal at this point or none, I'm not able to see or get to any other workflows. And then I followed that other link that you provided to me, and it simply will not let me in. So that's when I thought that it would be best if I just got my VPN up and running, and then I would be able to access Munis like I normally would if I was sitting at my desk. But that's still a roadblock at this time. I mean, I think I'm going to get it resolved, but I'm just not sure when.
Hey, Tim, you want to run through it real quick? I had a similar problem.
Sure. So I will go right now. And I'm clicking on I've got the VPN Access Manager, Eric. And then I click on the little padlock symbol, and I click connect, and I enter my username and my password. Hold on, I'm gonna do that right now. And then I click connect, and I get the window that says, welcome to Rauch County, which is good. That means I'm in. I click okay.
Hang on.
Yep.
So you should have another icon on your desktop that it looks like two little gears inside of a white box, and it's called AT.
You mean
it's maybe named something?
You mean on the band at the bottom?
No, on the desktop.
Hold on.
It may be called something else, but it should be a white box with two little gears inside of it.
I don't really know, maybe in the next 45 minutes. You could let her run around outside for a minute and then wear her out. Hey, honey. Hey, man. Did you,
I do not see anything on my desktop that looks like what you just described.
Okay, so you need that. It's a network mapping tool. You have to run that to actually update your network connections, and you have to do that every single time you connect.
Okay, well, I bet Willie will have to help me get that, but that's good information. I'll ask him about that. You described it as what, two gears in a white box?
Yeah, I'll try to do a screenshot here if I can figure that out.
Okay. Beth must be getting close.
So Tim, that, you know, that's just kind of, you know, as old white guys, you know, it's kind of population control, you know. So we're just gonna roll this all out, man. We're good, man. Okay, we got it.
Well, you know what's frustrating?
We're gonna go to the nursing home, and we'll catch COVID-19 in the nursing home.
what's frustrating about it was that for some time I had VPN access. It worked really good. I didn't have any problems with it. And then I just realized I just didn't really need it that much. Then I was just mostly doing email. So I basically stopped doing it. And I figured I could just pick up where I left off, but apparently not. So let me go back to my list. You saw Mo's budget update. We're up around $86,000. I guess the question would be, do we need to provide him some additional spending authority pretty soon here? Doug?
So I guess that's a question for Eric, really. So, you know, I don't know. I don't know. So I did see Bo's email, but I don't know. I'll have to think about it. So,
Eric, yeah, I would assume when he gets to that threshold, he'll make a request, and then would that be a supplemental budget? Or, I mean, I don't know. And maybe I should. I mean, is that a question for Dan? Strenad. Well, great. That clarifies it for me. Thank you very much for all that input.
This is Kathy. I do have questions about overtime at this point.
Well, now might be a good time because we have our overtime guru sitting out there in Hayden.
Yep. So, So the forms that Beth and Mo created and the rest, you know, and so I approved all that overtime. So I guess I'll have to listen to see what your question is, Kathy. So hopefully, you know, we're working on it, you know, and again, back to our motive here was our motive was to try and make sure we were using on-call people and not paying overtime to other people that could, a job could be done by somebody that was on call. So that was our first objective, and just to minimize the overtime. So I'll wait to hear your question, Kathy.
So yes, I agree that overtime is not something that we want to do. I guess the question I have is if it slips through and somebody works, let's say they're working 4 hours for their department and then they work 5 hours for the EOC, are they, you know, and it ends up being the end of the week, are they putting in 1 hour of overtime? Or there was, at one point, there was a question of how the federal government needed to see it. So I'm just trying to figure out if employees
that does end up happening, are they applying their time accordingly to what we need?
That might be a question for Strenad, but I guess, you know, fair is fair. So, I mean, if we're working, you know, 35 hours for regular county business and 7 hours for COVID-19, we definitely need to keep the 7 hours of COVID-19 separate. So we need to have, you know, 5 hours of COVID-19 regular time and 2 hours overtime. So, but if, you know, again, so I think we need to keep coding and Tim's, Tim and Beth can weigh in. Beth's on now too, but I think we need to keep, we're still moving on. We're moving on with our on-call time. And I'm not interested in padding our COVID-19 thing. You know, we have a governmental service that we need to provide. And so we're doing that. And I think, but we ought to be able to allocate our numbers to COVID-19 and being the most accurate. And if it looks like we're padding the numbers, I think that would be a bad thing. And we just ought to do it right. So.
No, but the reality is that the need for the overtime would have been created by COVID-19, not by our. Hi, Beth. Unmute yourself.
Hi, sorry, I was muted. Hi, sorry, running around. I'm as I was leaving, Dr. Harrington told me a couple things that I want to share with you guys, so I'll hold those. But I'll just let you guys wrap up this conversation. I don't really know what's going on, and I don't think it's probably worth the time for me to get up to speed, and I trust your apt decision making.
So I would agree with what Tim just said too, Kathy, that, you know, the COVID-19 caused the overtime. Let's charge it to the COVID-19 overtime account, and we'll go from there.
And so, if they look at our records and it shows that a portion of the day was COVID-19 and we're applying the time and a half, we don't anticipate that will be problematic as long as we have the right activity code.
Okay, are we settled on that issue?
So I just would echo back to Kathy, you know, so right now we're charging exempt people back to COVID-19. We're charging the commissioner time to COVID-19. So hell, I don't know. We don't know where the heck this thing's going, but if we keep the best records that we can keep, and then that way, you know, and we'll have to do a budget appropriation. So the main thing is try to keep our budget appropriation. And I think we want to charge off whatever we need to, being fair to society and whatever, that COVID-19, that we're going to have that supplemental budget. So, but again, the commissioners, I mean, and, you know, illegal as well, you know, exempt employees are charging off their time to COVID-19 because they're working on COVID-19. So whether we get any of that money back really is irrelevant. So, but I think we just want to have the numbers and have it together. So.
So I might have.
Okay, that sounds good. Thank you.
I might have a little something to offer to this conversation, which was I had a very productive CCAT meeting today, and I brought up again. I kind of asked the group about this reimbursement issue, and Elise Jones from Boulder addressed that, and she said, "Yeah, it's a really big deal. It's a really big problem." They're still arguing over $40 to $60 million worth of reimbursements from the floods 6 years ago, but Boulder County has offered up that they're going to put together kind of a guidebook to help the rest of us counties understand the process, and they're even willing to set up a Zoom conference in the next week or so for counties to get together and figure this out. So I'm gonna follow up with Elise and Mark from Boulder County to complete that discussion. So more to come on that. And I guess while we've got Beth on the telephone, maybe I would finish running down some of the information that came out of the CCAT meeting. It's kind of in order. I did request, and several other commissioners agreed, to to ask Ruth from CCAT to approach the governor's office and really reinforce the no travel message. It's a little bit confusing because he, in the governor's order, lodging facilities were declared essential facilities. And we all kind of worry that's still not sending the right message, especially the message that we in the mountain communities want to send to the Front Range, which is please stay at home.
Tim, just as a side note, the general consensus in the room this morning at this town hall was that that list was generated as a result of lobbying efforts more so than actually determining what's essential. And actually, you know, Lisa was the one that said that. She said, I know our press association was lobbying the governor's office to make sure that newspapers and media were considered essential. So that's just a side note, but I'm sure that's how lodging ended up in there too.
Yep. Everybody agreed that those twice weekly meetings that I've been listening into from the state are essentially useless. And that message is going to be passed on to the governor's office as well. The updates really have been just useless. It's just been various departments getting on and bragging about what a great job they're doing. So hopefully they can clean that up and make it be a more meaningful conversation. Back to the public lands issue, and Beth, I think you were aware that the San Juan County Sheriff had issued a public lands closure notice to all but local residents and was ticketing cars up on Red Mountain Pass. There was a bit of conversation around that and some disagreement about who really has authority over public lands. San Miguel County, in fact, closed a county road by resolution that led to public lands so as to shut down some of that activity.
Tim, what's the concern there? I mean, it's not necessarily transmission, right? Is it more like people getting hurt? Or I guess I just don't really understand what they're trying to accomplish.
Well, one of the things was there was a skier caught in an avalanche over near Ophir, and it took their entire search and rescue capacity an entire day to deal with that one individual. I think the other concern is that yes, these people may be coming and camping on public land, but they're sure as hell going to be stopping at gas stations, convenience stores, grocery stores. And then if they get stuck here, then they just present another burden. But I agree. I think it's really problematic for a county to say, hey, you're not allowed to access our public lands.
I was asked to address that question during this town hall that I just did. Apparently there was a letter from a constituent to Lisa asking, why aren't you guys doing the same thing? I stated that we don't believe it's the county's authority to close federal public lands, but that we would discourage people from being in the backcountry where they may need search and rescue. I hope you guys would agree with that statement.
I think at this point for us, it's a communications effort. And I think it's a communications effort that needs to come from the governor's office in addition to whatever else we're doing.
So the governor, Forest Service, also Aaron Booth sent out that, you know, all the trailhead places are all going to be shut down as well. So, I think that's another concern. It's just the congregating at the trailheads, so.
Yeah, I agree. I think, until things get worse, it's okay for now, especially since CPW closed down the campgrounds. That was good. It's messaging at this point. And that also came up. San Miguel County has also utilized the CDOT message boards to put out a message along the lines of what Gunnison County did. I think we should... consider that, Doug. Maybe you could bring that up at the policy group meeting at 1 o'clock. Is there a message that Route County wants to place on the message boards? and I'm not really sure where they're located coming into Route County. There must be one somewhere on Highway 40 coming up the pass. Is there?
So I know the one of, there's one in Craig. So there's one right there coming out of Craig right before you leave there. So, you know, that could be there. And, you know, I guess we could have one there at Steamboat too. It says, please hurry out of Rock County too. So I don't know.
Well, I mean, it is a good way to message to people that, you know, hotels are closed and we really are discouraging visitors. So food for thought for the policy group, I think.
Yeah, I'll ask.
This is Eric.
Yes.
I dropped off once before. Tim, I just sent you an email with a snapshot of that icon you need.
Oh, okay.
As search and rescue, I was part of an email discussion between Jack Bowman and Sheriff Wiggins, and that was discussed at this moment. Sheriff Wiggins did not see a need to make attempts to close the backcountry, whatever that, however you can define that, but it was recommending strong messaging.
I agree, and maybe that's something to add to Robin's list.
Sure.
Thank you for enthusiastically chiming in. I got a couple more things and then I can open it up to everybody else. It was interesting. Hillary Cooper from San Miguel County was giving some more details on their testing program. They had the benefactor there in San Miguel County that has the blood test that they can turn around results in 2 hours on, and they are turning those results around very quickly. They have a private jet that is parked at the airport with the pilot is in isolation, and once a day they take the blood samples that they've taken and they put them on the airplane and they fly them directly to New York, a lab somewhere in New York, where the tests are completed within 2 hours, and then the results of those tests are returned to San Miguel County. She didn't have any current information as to the results of those tests because they really just got this up and running in the last day or so. They have the ability to complete 150 tests per hour, and they have actually had to set up and absorb the costs of setting up a local specimen gathering facility that meets COVID-19 requirements. There are for those counties that might be interested in purchasing this, because of course San Miguel has not had to pay for this other than setting up the testing facility. But the company that is providing this is apparently going to be selling these tests to interested counties for approximately between $21 and $25 per test, with a minimum purchase of 10,000 tests. And so that's my update on San Miguel's testing program. The rest of the update from CCAT was misleading stuff that I think I can bypass for now. So I'm done.
So run those numbers by me again. So they needed 10,000 tests, and it was $25 a test?
You got it. So it's just a quarter of a million, right?
Yeah. I think I'll take my chance on dying. Whatever.
But San Miguel's not paying for them, right? They're sort of piloting the program, and now they want to sell it to everybody else.
Well, I mean, San Miguel doesn't care. I mean, I think the company is...
Right.
Yeah.
No, I meant the company. But the company has provided this to San Miguel at no cost, correct?
Correct, yes. They're doing all of this at no cost. Because not only would you have to buy the tests, but then you'd probably have to figure out, you know, hire your pilot to fly them back to New York on a daily basis. So, and I also know that when this was brought up with Kerry and Dr. Harrington, they both expressed quite a bit of skepticism about this. And I think CDPHE is even skeptical of this blood test. So I don't think we're ready to go anywhere near there, but I figured it was interesting information.
I think the community sort of forgot about it. Thank goodness. Everybody was asking about it the day that the news came out. Why aren't we doing this? And I haven't gotten any follow-up, so we'll see.
Well, we'll see. I mean, if it turns out to be an effective thing, you know, it's something we might want to consider, but not yet.
I guess my question is, how will they know it's effective?
I would think that CDC or CDPHE would actually certify that was an accurate test. I mean, and I think until that happens.
Unless they're testing these folks with both the blood test and the regular test, how do they confirm that they're actually limiting the spread?
Great questions. And I think it is one of the things that CCAT agreed to take on was a communication effort to us counties around that program.
Okay.
So I figure we'll just leave it with Ruth and CCAT for now and, monitor the information and then see what happens as we go forward.
Yeah, I mean, I'd hate to, not that we're going that direction, but I'd hate to spend $500,000 to be sold a bill of goods from some Chinese medical company.
A Chinese one at that.
Or any. Yeah.
I don't care where they're from. I mean, I just, unless there's real evidence, it feels like there's a potential for fraud here. Not that I'm trying to, I don't know. Anyway.
Okay.
Well, let's move on to the
extent of my update.
Let's move on to the construction site discussion. So we've all been having a couple of emails with Todd, and I passed on a couple of things about, you know, that, you know, and came out of the policy committee meeting yesterday, and what we brought up, Beth brought up, really. So, you know, how do we know that these construction sites aren't just a cesspool of the disease as well? I sent an email over to Todd. You guys all got copied on that, and then Beth followed up as well with him. And we got some information out of Louis Nivston as well, and some. So I guess my question is, sounds like that's a damn good idea. Just be proverbial about it. That we ought to be doing that, and just as Scott Kalman is doing on the environmental health side of things, there's the opportunity here that we could be proactive on these construction sites and make sure that. And Tim, you're the construction guru, so I'll just ask you, but there is an opportunity that we can be proactive in getting out there and trying to not having these things happen. So I just pass it off.
Well, I have one thought right
can
up.
Can I ask a question, Tim, before
sure,
we go
ahead.
Into the specifics? I apologize if you covered this before I got here. What was the discussion from the policy group about the idea of potentially either issuing an order or guidance around non-essential versus essential construction activities?
So we really did not have discussion on it. It was kind of a dead moment. I think everybody was in shock yet. So, it's a day-by-day thing, and we just deal with yesterday's shock. So we really did not have any conversation. When I brought that thing up, we were like at 15 minutes left in the meeting, and basically the discussion had no wheels, had no legs, and everything was kind of quiet. So
I guess I'd just say, while I think there's some logistical complication to doing that, I would be willing to go down that road if the policy group believed that it was valuable. Personally.
So from my perspective, I think I thought about this last night quite a bit, and it would make sense to me if we applied the same logic that the governor did to essential activities. And if the construction that was taking place didn't fulfill the needs of one of those essential activities, then it's probably construction that ought not to be taking place.
So I guess I was a little less than that, but again, I'm more into the thing, you know, let's just make sure everybody's got a plan. And just like the grocery stores, well, the grocery stores, we don't know about what they're doing either. So, you know, so we have a plan. We're hoping people are implementing, and the plan is posted on the job site. What Todd had sent back to us this morning had, you know, that the COVID-19 plan is posted on their job site, you know, and that everybody has an understanding of what, and, you know, and we have, you know, we can't have a meeting to discuss the job plan. But anyhow, so we ought to have some, I think for right now that might be sufficient. And I'll ask again at the policy meeting, but really it did not get a lot of legs yesterday other than from maybe one or two.
I'm okay with that, putting in place those mitigation measures. I think we should be a little bit proactive though. And I heard from, I think it was Jason Lacey that said to me, well, I'm kind of hearing from people who are contractors, like they don't really trust contractors to do the right thing. And so I don't want us to be complacent on that just because the governor exempted all construction. I mean, we've talked about there are things that are critical to continue and there are things that really aren't. And yeah. In a community like ours where there's constant building of second homes and these, you know, that kind of thing, I think we are maybe in a little bit different situation and we should just be a little proactive on that. But maybe we can enlist Todd to help us, you know, in the same way Scott has with the grocery stores, to just kind of keep an eye on things and let us know if he believes there are additional issues that we should address.
So I agree with Doug for today at least. And when we start thinking 2 days out in front, that'll be amazing. We're taking this one day at a time. The incremental step of coming up with a system to require mitigation plans from all of the contractors on all of their job sites, and something similar to what the one builder that Todd forwarded his mitigation plan, I think that would be a great idea. But I would like to, I agree with Beth that we should at least be messaging to the contractors, if it doesn't fit in those essential categories, then maybe we ought to think about shutting it down or at least limiting the importation of workers from outside of the county. And we'll keep an eye on it. And if we don't think we're getting good compliance with our guidance, we may move on to some kind of an order.
I also, in relation to the governor's order, I think, Robin, I know you're preparing a letter that is going to go out to the contractors that Todd has on his list. My interpretation under the governor's order, essential activities or businesses only continue to the extent that they are able to implement those social distancing requirements. That is still a requirement. It's a requirement on us. It's a requirement on anybody that has business continuing. And so that should be messaged to people. You know, if you're in an environment where your guys can't maintain 6 feet apart from each other, you need to work with fewer people. Like that's one thing, right? And these mitigation guidelines, these site plans that Todd's talking about, that's why those are appropriate and that's the focus.
May I ask a question just to make sure that I'm have the right things in the letter, and apologize, it's taking me so long. I was working on your commissioner's letter that is going out momentarily. So I guess the main headlines are that with both the state directive and the Route County, the state directive on public gathering and the Route County order on lodging, you know, we want to make sure that you know the rules. And so the big ones is that, you know, the governor asked to cut staff by 50%. Route County asked for no new visitors coming to Route County, that you have to maintain social distancing, and that really construction, our interpretation of construction is essential construction. I don't know if we can say that. Tell me, but what can we give any guidelines of what they can still build, or can we not say that?
So I think it would be not our interpretation, Robin.
Okay.
But it is our sentiment that, or our encouragement, or our guidance that non-essential construction activities cease, and that we avoid importing workers from out of town, and that the social distancing requirements be enforced.
Yeah.
But again, it's all, at this point, encouragement, voluntary. Guidance, advice.
It's voluntary until they don't do it, and then we say, okay, now you're going to not do it. We're going to issue an order.
I think the part that's not voluntary is via our building department, we can require those site-specific plans. I mean, that it's not a public health order per se, but Todd indicated that he felt like he could just require the site plans.
All right, I'll work with Todd on that language.
I'm curious, under what authority are we requiring site-specific social distancing plans?
Yeah, it's a good question. I could be wrong.
Board of Health. I mean, Board of Health. I don't understand why we couldn't do that on behalf of the Board of Health. That would supersede. And that was another question I had when Todd sent back that, well, he was interested in having a conversation with the Building Oversight Committee. And I said, well, this isn't a Building Oversight decision. This is the Board of Health decision, and we need to be moving forward. So I think the site-specific plans are pretty essential. Otherwise, you know, we just get into a situation where we're going to shut everybody down.
So I would suggest that we move forward today, voluntarily seeking that information. And maybe, because if you want to enforce that, Doug, through the Board of Public Health, I guess we would need a public health order. Is that not correct?
So yeah, you're probably right. But, you know, when we talked to Matt Mendisco yesterday on the policy committee about this, he has a plan with all of those contractors. They're supposed to not, they're working, well, they have their own private contract with the water plant, but their water plant, so they're not supposed to go home during the weekend. So they stay there and they're staying there working, and they're not supposed to be commuting back and forth.
So who has that? Is it the town of Hayden? I guess I'm trying to understand, like Tim is the authority. Maybe Eric could weigh in on this, because I think we should do this. I think we just have to understand, is it under our building department? Is it a public health directive that we're bringing our building department in to help facilitate? So I guess maybe Eric could help us understand that piece.
Okay. Well, Todd believes he can require it, and I would stand behind Todd. He did suggest perhaps running this by the Building Oversight Committee. There were some concerns about timing in that. But my understanding at this point is that if it's instituted as part of his checklist, and someone says, I'm not doing that, or we're not going to follow it, even if we do it, then I think it would be prudent to issue a Board of Health order, because then it's enforceable in ways that we've already talked about.
So thanks, Eric. I would suggest, and we could ask Todd, but I would suggest that I think the reason he said the Building Oversight Committee is just because there are representatives from each jurisdiction on that committee. I think we could just as easily accomplish what he wanted to accomplish, which is buy-in from our partners via the policy committee. We could say this is where we're headed, you know, and get feedback through that group.
I agree. There's no role here for the Building Department Oversight Committee. I agree. Run it past the policy committee. And it's not even a question. It's, hey, this is what we're going to go ahead and do, and we're just informing you.
So, somebody's kid. It's not mine. I don't have one.
I don't know who that is. Who's got their kids in the background?
I don't know, but I've got to confess I had a terrible dream last night, even as I slept really well. I dreamed that Donna was pregnant again. And I was trying to be as positive and supportive as I could be, but it was a difficult time. I can tell you that.
Just a quick That's question awesome. For me, please. I don't want to clog up your email any more than it already is, but I had compiled what the other mountain communities was doing as far as construction, and I can send that summary out to you if it would be helpful. But it sounds like you already know what direction you're going, so that might be extraneous at this point.
I'm fine with receiving it. I find it helpful to know what other communities are doing, and especially as we're asked questions, it's helpful to be able to refer to what other folks are doing, in my opinion.
Yeah, send it out. Whatever.
Do you guys want to talk about apartments, condos, dorms, et cetera? I got some insight from Brian on what's going on there.
Really excited.
Yeah, sounds good. Yeah. So, yeah. Yep.
So,
that sounds good.
The thing he shared with me today after our meeting was that Resort Group has expressed, I don't know if it was Carrie or who, some concerns about behavior at the ponds. That, you know, it's basically a dorm environment. You guys know that, I'm sure. And they are doing the things that kids do when they live in dorms. They're having parties, they're sharing joints, literally, you know, and kudos to Resort Group that they're concerned about that and bringing that concern up. Brian was a little, he has mixed feelings about them expressing some interest in closing the ponds. And I think from a public health standpoint, I totally get why they would think that might be a good idea. They have 5 people in 2-bedroom apartments, you know, and again, they're observing that these kids are just hanging out with each other, like you do when you're in your 20s. And so I think that's probably where Carrie's question is coming from. But then also just additional information. And what I shared with Brian is, well, obviously, you know, Resort Group has it's their establishment and they can kind of do what they want. But if they're asking for advice, it's a little bit of it's a hard situation because you don't want to leave those people homeless. And I suggested to Brian, well, I guess if Resort Group goes that direction, you should probably advise that we work together with ESF6, which is Mass Care, to make sure that those people don't end up homeless. You know what else to say about that? So there's sort of 2 different points. There's a question Carrie asked us about authority, and then there's just that background information for you guys and anything we might want to weigh in on with regards to that specific scenario. So I don't know which of those 2 you'd like to talk about first.
Not all at once.
Tim, you tell us which one to talk about.
I guess this falls under the heading of whatever our public health professionals think should be done.
Well, and so just to clarify, Brian is not saying that Carrie and Brian are suggesting shutting down the ponds. Resort Group is considering closing their own lodging to these seasonal employees.
So I would suggest I'd allow them to do that. I don't know. So if they want to do that, they ought to do that. And they can blame it on, I don't know, they can blame it on us and the congregating rule and whatever. But, you know, I think it just sounds like good practice that they ought to do that. But I guess we're just, you know, they're just opening up a brand new can of worms with a different taste to it. So I'm just trying to figure out how we're going to be able to get our arms around the whole concept of it and where we, where the rules go to and how many. Are we going to get square footages and how many people are in a room? And, you know, when we go to the colleges, and that was great research that you came up with, Beth, and I read all that, and I don't know. I don't have a good answer for this one, but I would say if resort group wants to do it, let's let them have them, encourage them to do it. So,
so where would all these people go?
Well, they're seasonal employees, right? So the Ponds doesn't allow them all to live there year round. Generally, they have some people that live there year round, but it's not the people who are here for just the winter. So I don't know. And honestly, to some degree, it's sort of not our problem. Just Brian brought that to my attention, that if they did choose to do that, we might have other problems. I think care to circle to our other point, I think Carrie probably is thinking about in that environment, and there may be other places where this is going on too, what is the authority of the public health agency to require cleaning, shutdown, whatever it is, considering that that is a just the nature of that. You know, it's not a restaurant, it's not a public business, public facing business. So I guess that was the question. That's probably where the question came from. And then that's specifically what Carrie's question is probably pertaining to. So maybe I know, and it wasn't me that did that research, Doug, it was Linnea. So maybe legal could just weigh in on what, and we can relay that information to Carrie, what we would or could do in that kind of a scenario.
Well, I liked the encouraging for them to, you know, and or even resort group to encourage them to vacate their apartments and minimize our risk and our exposure. And then, you know, if people need to stay because they can't go back to the country because they're, you know, there are no flights or whatever, you know, we can, you know, they can make special allowances for them.
I see that Eric dropped off the call, so I guess I'll say something in his stead. as far as the authority question, it's the same as our authority for any of this. They do have the authority to issue specific orders. I would want to be a little careful about if we're, you know, targeting one particular building. Well, they have several buildings, but one particular place, we want to make sure we're not discriminating. There are ways to do that. And you can see what I think Gunnison was probably the most specific with respect to, if you left and came back, you got to stay in your dorm room or apartment for 7 days by yourself type of thing. I didn't see anything specifically regarding cleaning. And I guess my concern there would be how do you, I think it'd be hard to enforce kids cleaning. Now Eric's back on.
You know, I don't feel like we're going to resolve this question in today's meeting. I think it's something to think about. I'm not sure that we should be taking any particular action on this unless we get some stronger encouragement from public health.
Did I understand, though, that Carrie was asking more about what authority is available to us if there were a positive case in that kind of environment, not a more general public health order? Maybe I misunderstood her question. And if I'm right, then we should make sure we're aware of exactly what the authority is before it happens, not wait until it does happen.
Well, that seems to be clear enough. I mean, as the Board of Public Health, we can probably issue darn near any order we want to about what they have to do in those situations.
And so probably, I think that's all Carrie was really asking. I think maybe there's a broader consideration about, you know, how do we address this on the broader scale? Is there a way we can do it or not? And I don't know the answer to that. short of like standing up and a dorm mom at the ponds. So
well, there's always going to be a distinction between the order that we give and our ability to enforce it. Just because we cannot or very well enforce an order doesn't mean that we shouldn't make the order. But well, I'm still looking for guidance on just exactly what that order should look like.
And so I would agree with you that on that point of a broader public health order, we probably are just at a let's think about this stage. I think in regards to Carrie's specific question, it sounds like we do have an answer and we should probably, you know, legal should provide that to her.
So you think her question was if there was a positive at the ponds, what authority public health would have to issue orders at that point?
That was my understanding of the question, but you know, I've received about 400 emails since then, and now it's just my recollection, so I'd have to look at her email more specifically.
I think that was the exact question. What do we do in case there's a positive at the ponds?
I can follow up with Eric since this part of that conversation. I'm not sure how often he's circling back with Carrie, but I'll follow up with him.
So she had, I'm looking again, she kind of had two things. She said, this is an item I'd like the policy group and health to discuss as soon as time permits. Communal/employee housing, ponds, college dormitories, Steamboat Mountain School, et cetera, and policy surrounding compliance with orders and closures if necessary for community health and communal and employee residential settings. So actually, I think her question is maybe more about the broader order and then also specifically how we can increase the level of compliance in those types of housing units.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And, I think especially the compliance. I mean, on the EOC this morning, Kevin elaborated out that he didn't think he was going to have any flights going anywhere today. So, that ends up being a little concern, too. So we want to make sure. Anyhow, just pass that on.
I'm back, by the way, but I'll just follow up with Linnea.
Okay. So we're done with that discussion for today, right? Hearing no objection. So Beth, I'm really most interested to know if you had the opportunity to have a conversation with Carrie and public health's capacity. And
I was going to try to call her immediately after this. I've texted her a few times and I have not gotten to speak with her. So that is a high priority for me to try and connect with her. I know she was in Moffitt yesterday and she's en route today. So hopefully I have a little more ability to reach her today, but I am going to continue to try. I mean, she just doesn't even have time to do that, right? So
I
did talk with Mo and his initial suggestion was to have Jenny Campbell, who's the epidemiologist that was brought on, do a little more. And Carrie expressed that she didn't feel comfortable delegating anything else to Jenny. There is, to your point, Tim, I think there's a little bit of a management piece here that we probably need to support with too. I think while Carrie needs help, she also, I don't know what her managerial experience is, and I'm not trying to say it's not good. I just have literally no idea. And I do have this sense of like, she's unwilling to delegate certain things. And so I'm hopeful that I can just talk through that with her a little bit so that we can figure out what the best way to take people off her plate is, because just putting a bunch of staff under her that she then has to direct, I'm not sure if that's going to solve the problem.
And then the other issue is that apparently we have not been successful in hiring the two additional contract nurses.
That's my understanding. They have a call out for them, but the staffing service has not been able to get them yet.
So somehow we have to come up with an alternative plan or something. This is very frustrating to
see. Yeah, that's why I want the list of tasks from Carrie, because I need to know which of those things require public health expertise and which don't. And then I think we probably need just to provide some very direct support to her in terms of managing the work between us and Moffitt County, and like, here's some just coaching, if you will, on managing this. Like, here's what you're going to do, and here's what you're going to have somebody else do. I think she just needs maybe some really direct guidance on that front. And honestly, your suggestion of maybe when Mark comes on, we at least initially, he's spending 75% of his time or whatever supporting Carrie directly, and we kind of carry on with other county functions as we have until we can figure that out. And I don't know if that's the right answer or not. I mean, So
the other thing, and since you're in the interim role, would you be comfortable getting a hold of Northwest Colorado Health, talking to Stephanie Einfeld and saying, hey, Stephanie, is there any way you can help us right now? We're in a pickle.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just ask her. And I don't, you know, it's funny because I've brought that suggestion up multiple times. Like, isn't there anyone at Northwest Colorado Health? And Carrie's never directly responded to that. So I don't know if that has to do with her relationship with them or what. But we're just in an all hands on deck situation. And I can't imagine that anybody, Steph Feinfeld or anyone, is going to continue to hold a grudge and make that cause a detrimental response to the situation we're in now. So
the only concern would be if that is really stepping on hers and Dr. Harrington's toes.
Well, the thing is, I don't think we would stand them. I mean, we wouldn't put them in any position that Carrie and Brian didn't kind of sign off on, in my opinion. I don't think we want to insert ourselves, but I have, you know, I don't see any problem in picking up the phone and having a chat with Steph and just saying, hey, do you have any ideas about how we might be able to leverage your resources to help support Carrie? And then at least I can bring those ideas to Carrie when I talk to her.
Do you have the bandwidth to do that?
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, okay. I don't have a lot else. What about the rest of you?
So I wanted to bring up back on this Northwest Colorado Health, and as the EOC moves forward, we need to make sure that, and Mo's doing a great job of it. He understands this very well, and I'm really appreciative of it. But we need to make sure we're differentiating between contract help and that needs to be contracted for, and then also then mutual aid that the municipalities are helping us with and the rest, because I think there is some expectations or something. But again, if we were to go out to Northwest Colorado Health, I just want to finish on that point on that would be not mutual aid. We would be contracting with somebody or something, or even doing what, you know, the same thing we did that we're doing with Robin as well, that, you know, we're needing some help and we're putting it on, you know, and we're moving that forward. So I just wanted to say that too.
I have been thinking about the EOC functions, and you guys know this a little better than I do, because this is the first time I've ever had to do this. You know, if I think about it, that ESF 8 public health, right now, it's really just Carrie and Brian, and some of the other ESFs, you know, they have more people included. Is there any reason that public health, the ESF, ESF 8 needs to only be our public health people? I mean, couldn't there theoretically, there are other agencies like Northwest Colorado Health that have a public health function and staff that could be a little bit more of a network structure there, like a team, you know, it's not just them. And then I was thinking about this earlier today, there's been so much like kind of going around in circles on the Board of Health and where's our role and what do we do and how do we get involved and whatever. Shouldn't we really, as the Board of Health, just have a representative to ESF 8 that's specific to our role as the Board of Health?
Well, the problem with that, Beth, is that goes back to what we discuss all the time, commissioners. We're on a board that makes recommendations to ourselves. So, yeah, you understand that. So, yeah, that's a problem.
Just trying to figure out that the communication, trying to figure out sort of the communication structure, I guess that just occurred to me, like that's where it belongs. That's where the Board of Health belongs. Just because our Board of Health is also the BCC, I get that, but like the Board of Health belongs in ESF 8. And so to that end, I don't know, maybe I can just run that idea by Mo and see, and Carrie, and see if they have any thought about that. But just, it seemed like, well, who communicates to who about what and when? And anyway, I've kind of up on a tangent, but.
It would be an obvious role for Mark Collins when he comes on board, would help bridge that gap. I agree.
Your question is, I haven't talked to Carrie yet, and it's a high priority item for me to do that right after.
So I had one other comment. So we don't have enough meetings. I sat in on the meeting with the phone call with Governor Polis, Senator Bennett, and Senator Gardner as well. So, and you know, it was pretty well attended. There was a lot of discussion, and we got the new Senate bill coming out, and we're waiting to send it to the House, and there was a lot of, well, thank you for what you're doing on both sides. You know, it was the same political spiel. The whole thing. So, but anyhow, it was
but
good,
that's an important issue, Doug, that you brought up, and that goes back to CCAT and they're talking about they will try to help bridge the gap between the federal government, the state government, and the counties to try to figure out all these revenue streams. And I don't know if we shouldn't be trying to set up something internally to be able to monitor all that. I'm sure legal's got their hands full, and I wouldn't expect them to try to figure out everything that we would need to do to access those dollars as they come down. But I think it's going to be pretty chaotic, and if we don't stick our hand out, there won't be any money landing in it.
So I think between, the email that you sent, I think we're sitting in pretty good shape if there's going to be money. I think the email you sent out to the municipalities, I think that's a great thing. And, maybe we actually figure out a mailing to send that out to all the governmental agencies as well, because, I mean, the other entities are also going to have COVID-19 issues maybe as well. Maybe they don't have emergency declaration. They're covered by the county's declaration already anyhow. But I think, the more we can prepare now while it's happening and have our ducks in a row, so to speak, and the better off everybody's going to be if there's any money comes down the pike.
So I would would very much hesitate to be the one to suggest that we should stand up yet another task force, but there may be a need for a task force to monitor potential revenue streams coming down from the government. I don't know. It's just a thought.
So, Tim, did you ever talk to Carrie Littman about that? Because you've brought this up, I think, for 3 weeks now. And last time we talked, I guess I thought you were going to check in with Carrie Littman.
So I've sent her a couple of emails over the last couple of days, and I haven't received any response. I'm a little worried about my email server. I seem to get emails at very random times, so I'm not going to throw her under the bus for not getting back to me. But as far as Carrie's role is concerned, I had envisioned that as being primarily limited to future reimbursements through FEMA for specific emergency items. I think there's a much broader thing, and maybe it's John Bristol is the right person to be monitoring all these other resources that are going to be available to individuals and businesses.
So he's already monitoring all of that and compiling those, and the chamber has a site that has all those resources together, and he's funneling it to the different, the interested parties via the lists that they have. So I really think for us,
I think the EOC has that handled via John Bristol. I think for us, it's about our reimbursements. And so, and I know that's, you've brought that up over and over, and I think you're right too. It's just a question of what needs to be in place to monitor.
You might have come on after I described that to everybody. So Boulder County is going to be offering up their lessons learned and expertise in that field. Mark, their lobbyist, is going to take that on and communicate with me and CCAT and potentially set up a Zoom conference with their staff to distribute that kind of information. So I'll keep my focus on the emergency reimbursements, and we'll just leave it to John to take care of the economic recovery and support item for the community writ large.
Thanks. Side note, I just got a flag from a friend that the governor is considering a recreate at home order to clarify for people that they should not be traveling to the mountains or to rural areas in order to recreate, which I am very supportive of.
And that may be a direct result of the lobbying that we did with Ruth this morning, because she was going to get right on that and run it up to the governor's office.
I think that would be great.
Yep.
Just please.
Other than, are we planning on meeting through the weekend?
I'm happy to. There might not be much, but we might as well. At least then we don't have a pile up of stuff on Mondays. I
agree. We should check in for, even if it's just for 30 minutes. Is the 11 o'clock time frame still the correct time frame?
We've gone back and forth on 10:30 or 11. So let's just clarify right now. Either is fine for me generally. I think I might continue to be asked to do these town halls.
I have a suggestion. Maybe we should do it immediately after the EOC meeting at 9:30.
Just whenever they're done, we hop on here.
Yeah, I think so. I would just get it out of the way earlier in the day. I guess I still have visions of doing some work around the property here and having a couple of hours to go outside and do some work. So if we could get it over with earlier in the day. So, yeah.
So it 9:30 works for me, or 10, you know, after the EOC. I've been on this, I like attending the EOC just to listen in as well. So after the EOC, immediately we reconvene back as the commissioners would be good for me as well. And I'm just partying my day and going back out and feed second half for them hungry cows out there after we get done with our meeting. So we're good.
That works for me too. And we'll just have to, when we have agenda items that need other people, we'll have to work around that piece and figure it out. But, we could schedule those starting at 10 or something like that on the days that those are needed.
Yeah. Kendra, are you on the line? Did you pick up on that? I'll send Kendra an email.
I'm here.
Okay, we need to change for Saturday and Sunday. The commissioners are going to meet at 9:30 a.m. or immediately after the EOC meeting.
Okay, I'll have Deanna update that.
Okay, great. Thank you.
So I have one quick question for you, if you could. So to think about a little bit, in conversation with Christy Windsor, with planning department, and she's trying to figure out how they're going to be handling their planning meetings as well. And so she had mentioned, instead of using the Zoom, maybe mute, and then she's been talking with Kendra as well, but instead of using the Zoom, that she would have some type of a wish I had the word for it, brain dead here, but
webinar.
Thank you very much, Kendra. Thank you. So you guys ought to think about that, because I think there's still April 16th or something. She has a meeting set for a planning commission with an agenda. Well, she has a BOA in there too. So she's kind of, and I told her why, I said, you know, especially on the Board of Adjustment, if you could use it first at the Board of Adjustment and see how it works, that might help you moving forward with the Planning Commission meeting that's upcoming. So just passing that on.
All right.
If I were a Board of Adjustment member, I could definitely help facilitate
that. Don't you have a conflict of interest?
I don't believe that I do.
Waiting to hear. She's waiting to hear from legal on her conflict of interest. We haven't closed the loop on that yet.
All right.
Somehow it became a lower priority. Sorry about that, Kendra.
I understand.
Okay. Mo likes to say, any alibis or last second thoughts?
You know, I'm sorry. The other thing Brian pulled me aside and said is he believes that the situation at Casey's Pond will be growing shortly based on what he's observed. He didn't have any other information for me, but just to flag that for you guys.
Great. Always looking forward to good news.
I know, right? Sorry.
Yeah. We need another challenge, another mountain to climb. Yep, we're good.
All right. If I don't see or talk to you before then, we will see you at approximately 9:30 tomorrow morning.
Great. Thanks, Tim.
Thank you. Goodbye.